All right.
Hello, welcome to another episode of the Thriving Adoptees podcast. So today I'm delighted to be joined by a new, really good friend of mine, a guy called David. He's a fellow adoptee, and he's just been sharing how he's lost 104 pounds in the last, 10 months, 9 months?
Yeah, well, it took a 10-month period, but it was over the last year, but so, I did it in 10 months.
Good on him. He's a shadow of his former self. and he's, and we're going to be talking about adoption and thriving adoptees today. We're not going to be talking about weight loss. So why, I don't know why I'm talking about this, but David, please introduce yourself to the listeners.
Well, thank you, Si. My name is David Bynum, and I live in Columbus, Ohio, in the United States of America. And I'm an adoptee. I was adopted at birth and had known my whole life that I was adopted. And I'm just glad to have met you and glad to be on your podcast today.
Fantastic. Great to have you here, my friend. Great to have you here. So when you hear the phrase thriving adoptees, what does that mean to you, David?
The first thing that came to my mind was that adoptees that are doing well, and I don't necessarily mean doing well professionally, that they're making a lot of money or doing well in their chosen profession, but are doing well within themselves, that are well-adjusted adoptees, that are striving within everyday life, that are living a good, normal, healthy life. That's what a thriving adoptee is to me.
Fantastic. Yeah. So can you share a little bit about your story, David, because it's a fascinating one.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, I'm in Columbus, Ohio, and pre-1964 was open adoption. The records were open adoption. Ohio sealed their birth records in 1964. So mine was an open adoption. Mine was an arranged adoption. I'm biracial, and that was frowned upon in Ohio, basically in America, but in Ohio. In the 50s. So I was given up for adoption. I was adopted by my birth, my adoptive parents, Coy and Nell Bynum. I came straight home from the hospital with them. I was in the incubator for a week, but came straight home from the hospital and raised in a normal life, normal, happy childhood. My mother explained to me that I was adopted as soon as I was old enough to understand what adoption meant. She sat me down and told me the circumstances of my adoption, that my mother was a young student, a young white woman that was a student and didn't have the support to take care of me, and that my father was a young Black student, played football. At the time, I was told it was Ohio State, but later found out it was Bowling Green University, but neither one of them had the parental support or the means to take care of me. So I was given up for adoption. And I had the best childhood imaginable. I couldn't imagine my childhood being any better if my parents had have given birth to me. So adoption was never, never an issue growing up for me. My childhood was as normal as anyone else's that I knew. And so my father passed my junior year, or my senior year in high school. And my mom was a great mother. She went on to remarry, I guess, when I was in my 20s, early 20s. And I had a great stepdad that took care of my mom. At that point, I was already grown, so it wasn't a lot of fathering to do, but he was a great mentor, took care of my mom, was a mentor, more of a mentor at that point in my life. But he was a good man, took care of my mom, helped me when I needed the help. And he passed on, I think, in 97. And my mom passed a couple years later in 99. But before she passed, we had our second talk about my adoption. She sat me down and told me that actually what I label as the greatest gift of selflessness that any adoptive mother or adoptive parent could give their adoptive child. And that's the permission to look for my biological family if I so desired. And she told me that there was a picture of my biological mother around the house if I wanted to look for it. So naturally I said, Mom, why are we even having this discussion? At that point, I had never really, really had a serious thought of looking. Sure, you know, as a child or as an adoptee, you kind of wonder through the years, what was my biological family like? You know, what was my mom like? What was my dad like? But they were fleeting thoughts because I had a happy, normal childhood. I really didn't spend a lot of time dwelling on it. So a couple years after my mom had passed, that seed that she had planted started to grow. So I was one of the lucky ones pre-1964 and was able to obtain my original birth certificate, which I did, went and got it and gave it to a friend of mine who was able to obtain my birth mother's address. So my wife and I at the time were sitting in front of my birth mother's building. And I was deciding what to do. Should I go up and leave a note on her door or leave something in her mailbox saying, hey, my name is David Bynum. I was born on this particular day. If you would like to, here's a contact number. But when that moment for me to do that came around, I lost my nerve. The fear came flooding back. All of those things that you hear, that you think of, hey, I gave you up once, what makes you think I want you back? Or, hey, I haven't told anybody about you, you gotta go. Or, you know, all the things that you hear, that fear is real. Let me tell you, that fear is real.
Yeah.
So when it came time, I drove off. I didn't get out the car. I didn't feel it in my spirit. So I drove away. And for 17 years, I didn't think about it again.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So with that being said, I saw the age of 60 on the horizon. And so I was having the normal issues that you have, health issues that you have with aging, you know. So I said, well, I need to, I guess, find out if I have any history, family history of anything coming up. So I decided if I wanted the closure, if I ever really wanted to find out who I was, where I came from, my family roots, to know my history, when was I going to look? When I was 60, 62, 65? So I decided that if I'm going to look, I'm going to look now, or I'm going to put this out of my mind and I'm never going to think about it again.
Yeah.
So I prayed, I sat down at the computer and I began to search, how do you find your biological family? And in 11 short weeks, I found both sides of my biological family and was in reunion with both sides of my biological family.
Fantastic.
So, I mean, now I found Adoption Network Cleveland and went through them, you know, Tracy Anders there. I took a DNA test through Ancestry DNA and did all of that. There were steps to find it, just didn't magically appear naturally, but there were steps to finding it. But just in 11 short weeks, I was in reunion with both sides of my biological family. So that was pretty amazing.
Fantastic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's amazing, isn't it? That fear. Because that fear stopped you doing it for 17 years. Well, it stopped you, and then you never thought about it again for 17 years, and then you took some action. So when I had that fear, so for me, the fear was being rejected again in my head at that stage. That fear was, as you say, it was real. It was really... It was fear, anger, and it was really strong in that moment that I felt it. Mm-hmm. Is it like that for you? Is that what you mean by it was real?
Yes, yes, it was overwhelming. I guess overwhelming would be the one word to describe it. Because you know, you carry it in your mind. You play different scenarios out in your mind, whether they be good, bad, positive, negative, whatever the case may be. You play them out in your mind. I don't know how often, I guess it depends on the individual, over and over for years and years. So when that moment of truth came, for me, I really felt no anger because I understood why I was giving up for adoption. So for me, it wasn't an anger thing. But that fear of rejection, once again, like you said, the rejection part of it was where my fear, I had the fear of rejection again. Yeah. And it was so overwhelming because I'm that guy that, oh, it's a fire. Sure. Let's walk into it. You know, I don't have that type of fear, but that fear of rejection and the emotional fear took over and it became overwhelming to me. You know, for me, I'm that guy, I'm the military man. By profession, I was a correctional officer. So I'm the one that went in with murderers and rape, you know, every day for a living. So it wasn't that type of fear where I was scared. It was the emotional fear that took over, you know.
Yeah. As you say that, I'm just dissecting how, because this was, for me, this was about five or six years ago. So for me, I think it was that emotional fear of rejection again. And then I actually got angry about my fear. And I thought, I'm not standing for this. I'm not going to let this fear rule my life. And I'm going to do the search. Because that's the only way I'm going to run into the fear to overcome it. I think that's what it kind of feels like now. And as I say that, I'm thinking really about the extent to which I'm trying to rationalize this 6 years on and how accurate my rationalization of it, because it feels in some way that I'm tying it into a nice bow and putting a ribbon on it, in terms of applying logic to this. And but that's kind of how it feels. I do remember it was in the therapist room, and the idea of my birth mother being outside the door of that therapist room and rejecting me as I went open that door to her. That's kind of what hit me.
Mm-hmm. So, well, that's that emotional fear of rejection. You know, no matter how we manifest it, that's what it boils down to. Yeah. You know, and whatever form that it manifests itself in, that's it. Yeah. That's it. Ultimately, that's it.
Yeah. And then the silly thing was that, you know, I found out that she died, and that she'd never rejected me. The circumstances were very similar to yours. in terms of a couple that didn't have the birth father didn't want to support my biological father didn't want to support my biological mother. My biological mother felt that she couldn't do it on her own. It didn't have that the biracial aspect, but it had that societal frown of single mothers and stuff. So, wow. So this is the Thriving Adoptees podcast. So what have you learned over the years, do you think? What the messages that you'd like to share that have helped you with the listeners, adoptive parents and adoptees? You've explained what thriving adoptees means to you. How do you think we do it? What is it that helps us thrive? The how-to, I'm not looking for the strategies. The strategies aren't going to work. But what you'd like to share, the positive stuff, because there's so much darkness around adoption. You know, we've touched on it. We've touched on this rejection, this feeling of rejection that we have as adoptees. What would you like to share with the listeners, David?
Well, I think the things that have helped, and then I can't speak for everybody, so I'll speak for what has helped me.
Yeah.
And if somebody can take something away from what has helped me, beautiful. I think what has helped me is I always, and this is just in life in general, what has helped me. But I think the attitude that you go into things with, when you go into things with the attitude that the glass is half full as opposed to the glass being half empty, when you go into things with a positive attitude that I'm going to make the best of it, that I'm going to make lemonade out of these lemons, that if there's a hurdle, I'm going over it. This is just a temporary bump in the road as opposed to a roadblock. You know, I mean, adapt and overcome. You know, these are all things that these are temporary things, as we were saying off the air about being able to go through something. When there's something, that's why you say, hey, I'm going through a tough time, because eventually you're going to come out on the other side. And it's going to make you stronger when you come out on the other side.
Yeah.
So I think it's the attitude that we face things with that makes a big difference in how you deal with it.
Yeah.
So when you deal with things with a positive attitude, when you deal with things expecting to come out the better for it, when you deal with things knowing that it's going to make me a better person, when I'm done dealing with it, makes it a lot easier to deal with whatever it might be, whether it's dealing with the fact that you were adopted, whether it's dealing with the fact that for whatever circumstances you may have had to give up a child, or being an adoptive parent dealing with adopting a parent or adopting a child, how to deal with that, because it's brand new for everybody. Whether you're an adoptive parent dealing with adopting for the first time or trying to, you know, deal with a child for the first time or a child that may not be of your blood, or being an adoptee trying to fit in a family that doesn't look like you or may not have your values or to have these things. The attitude that you deal with these things with, the heart that you love and having that open heart, that loving heart. These things make a difference.
Yeah.
And so just being open-hearted, open-minded, being positive, having seeing the good in everything instead of looking at it through a negative eyes or through a negative lens makes a world of difference.
Yeah.
So I think it's the way that we go into things and the mindset and the frame of mind that we go into things with makes all the difference. Yeah. Now, am I sitting here trying to sugarcoat everything? Of course we can't. You know, let's be realistic. It's not going to work for everything. But if we do that more than not, we'll get a positive result more than not.
Yeah.
But to sit here and think that's going to work for everything, that's you know, let's be realistic here. That's not going to work for everything. But if we do it more than not, we will have positive results more than not. So just keep a positive attitude.
So for me, the thing that really, like, I've got a whole new take on going through, you know? So there's a lot of trauma, grief, loss on everybody's side. There's in the adoption space, but we're going to go through that. We're going to go through the darkness. I guess what I'm trying to do with the podcast is point us all to the light at the end of the tunnel. Mm-hmm. And although it seems, if things seem dark, seeing the light at the end of the tunnel makes it easier to keep going. Mm-hmm. And for me, I'm totally with you on the mindset stuff. I was talking to an adoptive dad about this, Spencer, the first guest that had on the Thriving Adoptees podcast, and his view on kind of resilience, he talked about resilience, and he said sometimes it's just getting up in the morning, you know. So it is keeping going. It is going through. You know, we may be feeling really down and really dark, but if we keep going, then eventually the light at the end of the tunnel is going to show itself. And if we haven't seen it. So I think for me, one of the issues is that, I've tried that. As you say, we can't sugarcoat this. When I've tried to sugarcoat how I'm feeling, I inevitably make it worse. And when I try and be positive, or I used to worry about worrying, you know? So, somebody says, hearing some mindset stuff, we can't afford the luxury of a bad thought, or the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. And so, like, I'm scared, and then I'm angry with myself about being scared. So whatever our mind, whatever the whatever rubbish is going through my head, keeping going is the ultimate for me. You know, if as long as we just keep going, we keep persisting, we keep moving forward, even if that is, if we're in the darkest of days, and even that's just getting out of bed, or even that's just opening our eyes, it is about keeping, it is about going through even and keeping going, even when we feel like we're caught in quicksand, we're finding keeping going so tough because our legs are stuck, our legs are stuck. It is about keeping going and going through. And I guess I'm laboring that because I've never seen it like going through. So I've heard this stuff. If you're going through trouble, keep going. Mm-hmm. Just keep going, and no matter what, no matter what the devil on our shoulders saying, no matter what that negative voice in our head is saying, and then it is about keeping going. But we've got all these mindset people telling us to, change our thoughts and sending us down a rabbit hole, a vortex of darker and darker stuff. Well, it doesn't really matter what's going on in our heads if we just keep going through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Just one foot in front of the other, you know, because you're going to have good days. You're going to have bad days. We're human. We're all human. Every day is not going to be rosy. Every day is not going to be great. We're going to have good days. We're going to have bad days. But the thing of it is, no matter what, just keep putting one foot in front of the other, because tomorrow is going to be better than today.
Yeah.
You know, so just like Jim Valvano, a basketball coach here in America from North Carolina State who had cancer. Very, very motivational guy here. Yeah, a saying that's always there. Don't give up. Just don't ever give up.
Yeah.
You know, just that simple. Don't give up. Don't ever give up. So I guess the other thing
that's coming to my head is the Indiana Jones movie where they're trying to cross a chasm and across some these stepping stones are floating in space and they across this chasm, but the next one only reveals itself when you've stood on the previous one. So it's like one step at a time. And then when you look back, you can see the path that you've come, but it doesn't make any, it's just not visible. Our path isn't visible to us on looking forward. It only makes sense looking back. And I think Steve Jobs said something about that. And he was adopted, wasn't he? He said that. So that's what you're, but that when you were going through your search process, you just took the next step and then it all unfolded. And before we started recording today, you were sharing something about this and how you felt you'd been guided along that path and looked after. So can you explain a little bit more about that, David?
Well, like I said, when I finally decided that I was going to see the search through this time, I'm a religious man. I was raised religious. I believe in God. So I prayed and I asked God to order my steps. I sat down at the computer and began to search, how do you find your biological family? And I believe from the moment that I asked God to order my steps on my journey, he took control of this. Because Adoption Network Cleveland, which is 100 miles up the road from me, popped up on my computer. I typed in who is their adult adoptees program coordinator. It gave me her name. I emailed her. The very next day, she emailed me back. She took control of it, told me what to do, how to prepare. And it was less than a week later, she was back with information. And I was in reunion probably 10 days within 10 days of me contacting her. I was in reunion with my maternal brother and sister.
Yeah.
And probably 35 days after that, I had found out who my paternal father's side brother or sisters were. So that's why I know it was not me. At no point was this David Bynum making this happen. This was God making this happen. It unraveled. Too quickly, too rapidly, too smoothly, too seamlessly for this to be a David Bynum production. I know this was divine intervention. Yeah. So whatever you subscribe to, whatever you believe in, for me, this was God.
Yeah.
This was God's hand on this project. And even in the making of the documentary, which I'm sure we'll get around to here in a minute. It was unfolded. It became, it was done too seamlessly, too smoothly to be a David Bynum production. So I know good and well it's been God's hand on this. But as I was telling you earlier, Si, God's hands have been on my life even before I got here. So I just feel blessed. And as I state quite often in the documentary, I'm the most blessed man that I know. So
putting those two things together, my somewhat long ramble on this, and your much neater summary of it. So God's been laying out the stepping stones for you.
Mm-hmm. Right. My whole entire life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So before we get into the documentary, talking about the documentary, so you actually found out that your mom and dad had passed, yeah?
Yes. Yeah, so along my journey, the one thing, well, not the one thing singularly, but one of the things that was fairly disappointing in the journey is that both of my biological parents had passed. My biological mother had passed just 2 short years after, or at three years after my adoptive mother had passed. And I often had said, once I had time to sit back and reflect on this whole thing, that I think it was probably God's hand, once again, when I was sitting in front of my biological mother's apartment, that when I told you I didn't feel it in my spirit, I think that was God protecting me, because I don't know if in my 30s that I could have handled losing my adoptive mother and then turn right around finding my biological mother and then losing her too.
Oh.
So I don't know, because she would have passed a year after I had reunited with her. So I don't know if I could have took losing my adoptive mother, then 2 years after that, finding my biological mother, and then a year after that, losing her.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that was God's way of protecting me then, saying, hey, I don't think emotionally you're ready for this. So why don't we put this on the back burner until I think you're ready, which might have been that 17 years later. So everything happens for a reason. As we were discussing off camera, I really feel everything, or off camera, off air, that everything happens all for a reason.
Yeah.
And that just might have been my time to search at 58 instead of at 39.
Yeah. So, I mean, my... So after, when you found the stuff that you're mentioning now, mm-hmm. Is that, did that realization come to you, or when did that realization come to you that maybe that you hadn't done the search 17 years ago or 18, 19 years ago now, you hadn't done that search was the right thing? When did you come to that realization, and did you have any kind of, I wish I'd searched earlier thoughts as well?
So once I decided to look, everything became a whirlwind. You know, there was no time to catch my breath because everything began to unfold so fast, so rapidly. It went from search to reunion to making of the documentary. So I really didn't have time to process much of anything because it was unfolding so fast. Every day it was something new. So once things had a chance to kind of slow down and I kind of had a chance to catch my breath, I had a chance to process a lot of things.
Okay.
So during that time is kind of when I had a chance to kind of sit back and think about things. So that's when I had a chance to think about the day that I was sitting in front of my birth mother's building. And that's when I kind of had that aha moment, like, you know what? Well, maybe that was God telling me that I wasn't ready. So it was after all of the discovery on this journey, you know, the one that I completed just here recently. And so I had a chance to think about, should I, could I, would I, do I regret? So no, I don't have any regrets that I did not get out of the car that day, because I honestly feel that that was God telling me that I was not ready. You know, so no, I don't question it. I never question, well, what if I'd have looked earlier? That's just been more time I'd have had with my siblings. That'd have been, no, everything happens for a reason. I'm a firm believer. I don't go back and play the what if game. Well, what if I'd have got out? Well, what if I'd have got, well, what if I'd have hit the lottery and been a mega millionaire? You know, so no, I don't play the what if game. I don't play the what if game. Everything was supposed to happen in its own time, in its own frame, in its own season in my life. So I took my journey when it was time for me to take my journey.
That's interesting, because after I started my search, I found that my birth mother, my biological mother, had died. And I didn't play the what if game either, despite the fact that, you know, well, I didn't play the what if game. I'm not a religious guy, so it wasn't God protecting me. It was just, it wasn't right for me at the time or whatever. I didn't play the what if game with that, but I have played the what if game with lots of other things in life. So it's interesting that I didn't play it with that particular event. What would you like to share with others in terms of like perhaps adoptive parents listening, concerned about their children, adoptive children, starting the search? Does anything come to mind?
Well, and this is something else that I've had time to reflect on. So I guess before I say this, let me qualify it. I was sitting here having a chance to go back over my life now that I'm older and now that I've completed this journey. And one of the things that I'm most thankful for is that my mother sat me down when I was young and told me that I was adopted and explained to me what adoption was and the circumstances of my birth that she knew, the best that she knew, the circumstances of my birth. I think that gave me a chance to live as normal of a childhood as was possible, and also eliminated the chances of me finding out something later in life that would have made me question my whole childhood, my whole existence, my whole everything I thought to be one way, come to find out later was totally different. So I was very thankful looking back that my mother was sat me down and had that talk with me. Now, I can't say that for everybody, but for me, because I'm not going to in no way try to speak for everyone. But for me, I was very thankful that my mother sat me down and was very honest with me. That eliminated any possibilities of anything, any earth-shattering discoveries later in life.
Nobody also likes shocks.
No, I don't like shocks. No, I don't like surprises. Shocks. Yeah, I don't like surprises. I don't even like surprise birthday parties. I don't like surprise anything. So I was very thankful she did that. And I can't tell anybody, I think you should do that for your child. I think that's a parent's choice. Yeah. All I can tell you is I'm very thankful my mother did that for me. But I think that as a child, I would have rather known than not known. I think too, there's still a stigma attached to adoption, which I think doesn't deserve to be there. I think that if we can go a long way to start to removing the stigma that is still attached in some circles to adoption, that will help to normalize adoption. That will help to remove the darkness that goes along with adoption. I think, too, it will help to remove some of the trauma that's associated with being removed from your natural parents, from your natural families. And once again, this is my personal opinion. I am in no way speaking for anybody other than myself. But I think that being open, being honest, and communicating is going to be helpful for everyone. It removes a lot of pressure. It removes the pressure from the adoptive parents. It removes the pressure from the child. And it removes the pressure from the biological parents, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So if there was anything that I would have to say, it would be that. And once again, I'm prefacing it by this is my opinion and my opinion only.
You eloquently and beautifully put, David. Really lovely. I mean, and so sensitively put as well, because this area is very, very sensitive. So I've been accused in a Facebook group a couple of weeks ago of toxic positivity. Now, I've had some adoption trauma. My trauma has been far weaker and far less shorter lived than other adoptees. So I've been through this anger and this fear of rejection, and we both lived that fear of rejection again. So we've had those things come for us. But you know, when we're back to, there seems to me to be, we live in a polarizing world, don't we? Whatever we're talking about, everything seems to be getting more and more extreme. And it's funny, as I say that, I remember this. I remember the extreme, the concern about, you know, polarization. I remember this hitting me when I was like 18. So we had Margaret Thatcher running the UK as our prime minister in the early 80s. And she crushed the trade unions, and the politics was going further and further apart. The right and left were going divergent here in the UK. And I remember as an 17, 18 year old being quite concerned about this, that, you know, the further we went apart, the further we would go apart. And wouldn't it be better if we kind of came closer together, and because, you know, we'll find some mutual ground to have a discussion on if we come closer together. So this idea of polarization has been in my head for a while, for whatever that is, 40 years. But in this adoption space, we have this polarization of the trauma and the darkness and the anger and the disgust and all that. And then we have this, on the other side, we have this kind of deluded, everything is going to be okay. Mm. And the truth is obviously somewhere in the middle, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yes, it is. And, you know, I guess at least here in America, it was so obvious over the last 4 years. I know you guys had to be looking over here at us like we were crazy. You know, things are starting to settle down a little bit now, but it was never more obvious since my childhood, you know, because I grew up during the civil rights movement and all of that, but it was never more polarizing than the last 4 years over here, man. So I totally get it. I totally get where you're coming from. So
yeah.
And,
well, we have been looking over, and being very, and speaking very personally. I've been very confused, but I'm very confused by British politicians as well. So, I'm very confused by all politicians. Most of them have never actually done anything other than talk. They've never produced anything other than words, a lot of them like career politicians and lawyers. I'm not a Trump fan. I'm not a Boris fan. But I did think that because Trump had created things, then he would create more things. But all he seemed to create was more polarization. So that clearly didn't end well at all. And I'm probably going into some very dangerous space here. So let's bring it back to the.
That's what I was getting ready to say. Yeah, let's get back on course.
Let's get back on track.
Since you can edit this, we can get back on track here.
Yeah, we get back on track. talking about producing stuff. So you've created this documentary. You created this film of. What sparked that idea?
Well, as it started to unfold here, as the story started to unfold here in Columbus, I coach high school football and was a pretty good athlete here. So I'm pretty well known in my city. Plus I'm old. So, and been here my whole life. So as the story started to unfold and people started to hear about, you know, my journey and the results of my journey, they were going, you know what, this is such a good story. You need to tell people. People need to hear this. So I had thought about maybe farming it out. I've had a production company for 20 years, 25 years. Ever since I retired from the state, I started a production company. And so I thought about, should I farm it out? Because maybe I'm a little too close to this story to tell it myself. But then I thought, well, wait a minute, who can tell this story better than me? So I decided to kind of sit down, write a script, kind of tell the story on paper, go through, organize it, then start to contact people, reach out to those that were involved to see if they would be interested in becoming part of the project. And to a person, everybody I contacted wanted to be involved. Wow. So I went ahead and wrote the script, wrote everybody's part, sent them their part so that they would know what I had in mind, asked them to sign off on it. Everybody signed off on their part. Then I organized the shooting schedule, did all of that, or put together a production crew. Went out and met with different people. I met with a composer. I met with the trust of a local music legend here that it passed on, but I wanted to use his music, and the trust let us use his music. Then we organized the schedule, put everything together, started shooting interviews. Then we put our road trips together. I went to Cleveland, talked to the Adoption Network Cleveland people. Then we had the road trips to Atlanta, Georgia, to South Carolina, to West Virginia to talk to people, shot the interviews there.
Brilliant.
And came back. We edited it, put it together. I thought that it was completed until I sent it to the aggregator, who then began to dissect it and sent it back saying, you have to correct this, 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 this. So that process took another 9 months to correct it, to get it ready for broadcast, because the broadcast standards are so high.
Yeah.
So we had to get it ready then. So altogether, from the time we sat down and decided to do it until the time it was released this past April was another year. So it was a 2-year labor of love.
Wow.
So, but the finished project is out, up and out. And it was a good feeling to be out, to have completed it.
Yeah.
And it kind of walks you through step by step the process. So it's my hope that somebody that watches this film in the adoption community, although it's not just for the adoption community, but it's tailored for the adoption community. And it's my hope that someone watches this film and takes from it what they need, whether it's a roadmap to start your search. It shows you how I did mine, whether it's to show you what you need to do to prepare emotionally, physically, spiritually for your search, whether it's the reactions of those that were contacted, being my siblings, my aunts, it shows you something that you very rarely see. At the end of it was my 60th birthday party. And at my 60th birthday party, I had every facet of my history together in one place. Wow. I had my adopted family, my in-laws, my maternal family, and my paternal family all together in one place. So every facet of my history was together in one place. And man, that was an unbelievable feeling to see my complete history together. So,
wow. Yeah, I watched this. I watched it at the weekend. Mm-hmm. And that was the most touching moment, that end bit. And also your daughter was in it as well.
Yes.
That bit, I can't remember exactly what she said, you know, but that bit really, her reaction, her emotions, and how proud she was of her dad, really. I think that's why it touched me. My dad passed 4 years ago, so I think that's probably why it touched me as much as it was. And her obvious, the love just, you know, bounced off the screen like when we're recording this podcast on Zoom. So, you know, the love that comes off you and the love that comes off your daughter, just one in the same. I think that's really what bounced off me. So I'm going to put a link to the trailer and a link to the film in the show notes of the podcast. And I'd urge everybody to check it out. It's an incredible story. And incredible when you think, you said it was 11 weeks to track them all down for this thing to unfold, but 2 years to make the film of something that took 11, that this is, and that's for a guy who's had a production company. So the labor of love, the love that went into this, and the love and the patience and time that you put into it, you know, it really shines when you watch the film. So, yeah, fantastic.
Well, thank you, Si. Thank you very much. And yes, going back to my daughter, she's been my biggest fan, my biggest supporter. So I really appreciate her. That's my mini me. She is my mini me, and I'm so thankful for her. And she just recently gave me another grandchild. I have another grandson that's 14 months now.
Wow.
And so I'm very blessed. Like I told you, I'm the most blessed man I know.
Yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm. So is the 14 month, is he starting to, you know, think about football? Yeah.
Oh man, this cat here, I call him Little Debo. He is so strong. He's running around here. I bought him one of the little basketball goal things. He's around here dunking the basketball and picking up my football and running with my little footballs. And yeah, hopefully he's the next great one.
Yeah.
Hopefully he'll keep the lineage going.
Yeah, that's great. Lovely. Mm-hmm. Is anything you'd like to share? Any questions that I've not asked that you'd like to, anything you'd like to share with the listeners, David?
Well, just stay positive about your life, stay positive about your situation, and understand that the adoption is the light and the way. Don't dwell on the darkness, dwell on the positives of it, and always pay forward. Remember that there's more to be thankful for than to be dwelling on the negatives about, because life is good. Life is what you make it. You know, sometimes we're not always dealt the best of hands, but we can play the best of the games with the cards we're dealt. So just stay positive and always keep putting one foot in forward in front of the other one. Keep it moving. And remember, we're going through things. We're not stopped by them. We're always going through them. And we'll come out better on the other side. So
fantastic. That you've given me, and hopefully the listeners that need it, that a whole more profound understanding of what going through stuff is. Oh yeah, I got through it. I'm going through it. It's not like, no, it's we're going through it.
Yeah, that's right.
We're going through it. Brilliant.
And we're going to come out better on the other side.
Yeah.
We're going to come out better for it.
Fantastic. Thanks a lot, David.
Thank you, Si.